From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th pole. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Coming to the 8th pole in the Toyota Bluegrass, Swiss Skydiver fighting on. Art Collector is right there. Art Collector ahead in front. A half length to the good. 16th pole. Art Collector, Brian Hernandez Jr. to win the Toyota Bluegrass.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 of the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind. It's Tis the Law. He won the Belmont Stakes. He's going to win the run, Happy Travers.
She dares the devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She Dares the Devil turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She Dares the Devil scores in the Oaks.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to the show that launched this great network, the Equine Forum, right here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and coming to you digitally with our live streaming or podcast of the show at horseracingradio.net. Well, certainly no shortage of things to talk about this morning. On the racing side, 7 win-and-you're-in Breeders' Cup Challenge races slated for today. You have 5 at Santa Anita, Speakeasy, the Rodeo Drive, the American Pharoah, the Chandelier, and the Awesome Again. We'll have coverage of all of those, or at least most of those, later this afternoon, 6:30 Eastern. Anthony Spiel and Bobby Newman will take you through those races here on the network. You can head over to horseracingradio.net to get more information and to listen live, by the way. You have 1 win and you're in at Belmont today, the Vosburgh. And then you have 1 at Newmarket, the Judmont Royal Lodge. So 7 on tap for today. Santa Anita also plays host to the Santa Anita Sprint Championship and the Zenyatta Stakes tomorrow. Both of those are win and you're in events for the Breeders' Cup, too. And I'm going to be joined by Santa Anita's Director of Publicity, Mike Willman, coming up at 9:40 Eastern toward the end of the program today. And we'll talk about all of those winning your in races at the Great Race Place. At Gulfstream, the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Finals will take place later today. 6 stakes races worth $1.2 million. And you have the talented Breeze On By, who goes for a sweep of the Florida Sire Stakes series. The 2-year-old son of Cajun Breeze captured the Dr. Fager August 1st and the Affirmed on August 29th. And the Ralph Nix trainee, now a perfect 3-for-3 to begin his career. Yeah, he's pretty good. And he's going to seek to become just the 5th horse to sweep the FFS Open Division. He'll join 3 Rules, Sir Oscar, Seacliff, and Smile if he can pull it off. Pretty good names there. He's owned and bred by Gil and Marilyn Campbell's Stonehedge. And I'm going to be joined by Marilyn at 9 o'clock Eastern time to talk about not only Breeze On By, but to talk about that Florida racing and breeding program. On the business side of racing, you have plenty of hot topics in the spotlight over the past couple of weeks. The issue of tracks regulating jockeys' use of the whip is front and center, as California tracks will officially adopt new regulations this coming Thursday, October 1st. Those new rules in California state that a jockey is only allowed to use his whip a total of 6 times during the race, and no more than twice in succession, which, by the way, will count toward that 6-time total. New Jersey went even further. Beginning with the Monmouth Park meet in 2021, the use of the whip to encourage a horse during a race will be banned altogether. And if you ask me, that's going too far. That's a joke. That's just my opinion, but I'm going to ask Rajiv Miraj his thoughts on the topic when he joins me at 9:20 Eastern. As a jockey, I kind of have a feeling that I know what his opinion is going to be, but I, for one, think this is going a bit too far. It becomes a safety issue for the human participants, for the jockeys. But I'll ask Rajiv about that. Maybe he feels that he can find a way to make this work and still stay safe out there, but I don't know. And finally, on August 31st, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made a visit to Keeneland to announce the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, a bill which was recently introduced in the Senate about 2.5 weeks ago. U.S. Congressman Andy Barr has done the same in the House of Representatives. Congressman Barr will be with me in about 10 minutes or so at 8:15 Eastern to discuss the bill and share his thoughts on why he feels this is necessary for our sport, number one, and number two, why this will be beneficial for our sport on several different levels moving forward. Then in my following segment at 8:35 Eastern, we'll examine the opposite side of that argument as I welcome in Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA, the National Horsemen's Organization, which does not support this bill. So you'll hear both sides of it in the first half of the program this morning. The bill's intent is to make horse racing safer, fairer, and more transparent. At its core, that is what the bill is designed to do. Also announced was the launch of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, which is an independent, non-governmental regulatory body responsible for improving current regulations and bringing a new level of transparency to our sport. That board is going to set national standards for racetrack safety, anti-doping and medication rules, and lab protocols. The bipartisan bill will provide federal recognition and enforcement power for the board to enable them to develop uniform baseline standards for thoroughbred racing. That's what that is all about, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. Now, there are many, many layers to this bill and several points of conversation. And as I mentioned, I'm going to explore both sides for you in the first half of the show this morning, which leads me to my poll question. Are you in favor of federal oversight in horse racing? Yes or no? Pretty simple. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. Are you in favor of federal oversight in horse racing? Yes or no? Now, no one can dispute that we are a sport that is extremely fragmented. Each state obviously has their own racing commissions, their own individual set of regulations, and we're not a sport that possesses one governing body to oversee and police the entire sport. If I'm not mistaken, I think there are 38 individual racing jurisdictions in the United States. 38 different ones, each with their own set of rules. And people will often try to compare racing to the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, which do have commissioners and they do have a governing body. I've always said that one big difference is that all of those other sports have leagues. We aren't a league. We don't have a league. And I've said it many times that when you look at infractions, a holding penalty in the NFL is a 15-yard infraction, no matter which stadium you're in, whether it's New England, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, Tampa, LA, it doesn't matter. It's 15 yards if you get a holding penalty. After a batter gets 3 strikes in baseball, he goes and takes a seat on the bench, no matter which ballpark, which state that he's playing in. New York, California, Texas, doesn't matter. That's not subjective. Those are the rules. It's cut and dry. If a horse comes over 1, 2, or 3 pass and interferes with another horse, there's no automatic rule that says that horse is going to be disqualified. It is based solely on the opinions of the stewards and the way infractions are viewed from track to track and state to state are not consistent in our sport. It is not a set standard of rules like it is in other sports, but those are sports that have leagues and a governing body. That's one aspect that we need to improve upon. The other are the rules involving consistent medication protocols from state to state. We don't even have a standard set of uniform nationwide rules in place so horsemen will know how to administer medications when running horses in different states. Yes, there are guidelines. Yes, they look into it. Yes, they do their due diligence. But I think oftentimes trainers get tripped up not being aware of nuances to the rules in certain states. And trust me, that's a huge problem. As a sport and an industry, we have had our chances to clean up our act and police ourselves over the years. There's no doubt about it. Sadly, we haven't done it. Thus, the position we find ourselves in with the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, which has now been introduced. And organizations like USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, being tasked to oversee the medication control program. When we look in the mirror as an industry, and if we're truly honest with ourselves, we'll see that we have had many, many opportunities to get our house in order. And it hasn't happened. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. Again, going to be joined by U.S. Congressman Andy Barr coming up in just a few minutes after this first commercial break. Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA, will weigh in and share his thoughts at 8:35. Marilyn Campbell talking about the Florida breeding program, 9 o'clock Eastern. Rajiv Miraj discussing jockeys and the new whip regulations at 9:20. And Mike Willman from Santa Anita previewing the Win and You're In action at the Great Race Place, 9:40 Eastern. That's all coming up. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN.
They're in the gate at Churchill Downs. And they're off.
Churchill Downs September Meet is underway with post time each day at 12:45 p.m. now through Sunday, September 27th. A total of over $4.2 million in prize money will be offered over the nine-day race meet. And don't forget the $100,000 Grade 3 ACAC set for Saturday, September 26th. Don't miss the action. For more information, visit ChurchillDowns.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
We've seen painful tragedies on the track in recent years. Doping scandals have rocked the horse racing community. These challenges pose a threat not only to this industry, but also to the 24,000 Kentuckians who work in it. As I indicated, the Washington Post said we should have been put out of business. If we want to preserve horse racing and its future, we needed to act. We owe it to the horses, we owe it to the jockeys, we owe it to the trainers, the breeders, and fans to make thoroughbred racing as fair and as safe as possible. As I said, the pioneer in all of this was Congressman Andy Barr, who was searching for a solution for the last few years and has been an integral player in getting us to where we are today. The Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority we're announcing today is a critical part of that solution. This board can help set national standards to promote fairness, increase safety, and help preserve the sport.
That is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announcing the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act at Keeneland on August 31st. He was joined by U.S. Congressman Andy Barr, who has done the same in the House of Representatives. The bill was introduced a couple of weeks ago, about 2.5 weeks ago, by Senator McConnell into the Senate. U.S. Congressman Andy Barr doing the same in the House. Looking forward to visiting with Congressman Barr coming up in just a couple of minutes. He will share his thoughts on some of the key elements involved with this legislation. He'll talk about some of the reasons that he feels this is so important to the continued success of the horse industry. And then in the next segment, we're going to explore the complete opposite side. I'll be joined by Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA, right around 8:35 Eastern time. And he'll talk about the fact that they don't support this piece of legislation. And he'll lay it out from the horseman's perspective. So a lot of ways to get into this issue. There are a lot of elements to discuss, and I'm looking forward to doing that here in the next couple of segments for you. Don't forget our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, also comes up toward the end of the program. And then the second half of the show, we'll focus on racing from Florida and from California with all the winning you're in action out there on the West Coast this weekend. And we'll talk about the whip issue that's come up with the new regulations in place in California, which go into effect on October 1st, and then in New Jersey next year with the beginning of the Monmouth meet. So Rajiv Miraj will join me at 9:20 Eastern to talk about those. Again, our poll question at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, is quite simple this morning. It's a yes or no question. You can go there and weigh in now. And I want to know, are you in favor of federal oversight in horse racing? Yes or no? Head over there now and let me know your thoughts. A reminder, our coverage later today, 6:30 Eastern, of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races from California, 6:30 to 8:30 Eastern time. Make sure you're locked into that. If you can't be in front of a television, we'll have you covered here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to be a big one. You'll hear the Vosburgh on tape delay. That goes earlier in the day. I think the post time for the Vosburgh is like 5:15 Eastern. So that goes earlier. You'll catch the Vosburgh on tape delay, but you'll catch most of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races from Santa Anita live with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman. And you can tune in Sirius 219, XM 201, stream it worldwide on this website, horseracingradio.net. Well, as I told you, there are several elements to the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act that many people are in favor of. There are many that some will say that's not good for racing. And you're going to have that. Any piece of legislation, you're going to have pros and cons to any of it. But when this was discussed initially on August 31st, and this has been in the works for a long, long time, and again, Congressman Barr can talk more about that when he joins me here in a few minutes, but when you talk about some of the different things that are involved here, one of the things that's going to be a sticking point for some people will be the fact that USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, will oversee medication and testing protocols. And some people say, wait a minute, they deal with human athletes, not equine athletes. So that will be a sticking point. But look, there are so many people that support the bill. There are so many positives within it. And I'm joined now by Congressman Andy Barr to talk more about that. Congressman, first of all, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know you're very busy. When you spoke at Keeneland on August 31st, you mentioned the word uniformity, and you referenced the industry's patchwork structure when pointing out the fact that our sport has 38 separate racing jurisdictions, each with their own set of rules and regulations, which certainly doesn't lend itself to consistency or uniformity. And I think at its core, that's the reason so many people feel this type of bill is imperative to the future success of our industry. So if you would, Congressman, let's start by walking through some of the key elements included in this bill.
Great. Well, let me just say, you hit the nail on the head. We do labor as a sport, as an industry, under this patchwork of inconsistent and conflicting rules that really just doesn't make sense. The National Football League, the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, there's not the same level of variation of rules. We want a level playing field. We want horses that race at Keeneland and then subsequently race in Maryland or New York or California or Florida. We want them to be racing under the same rules. And we don't think that just like we don't think football games should be played differently in different states, we don't think thoroughbred racing should be a sport where you have different rules in different jurisdictions. So that's one compelling reason to support this. And obviously, because of the issues with safety, because of some of the indictments that we've seen with doping, because of the problems that we saw with racetrack surface safety issues and some of the breakdowns, we want a safe sport both for the equine and the human athletes, because that's the right thing to do, obviously, and also because we want to attract a new generation of fans. Handle is the name of the game, and we want more horse players in our business, in our sport. We want to bring new fans, and that obviously benefits the industry generally when you talk about breeding stock. I have the privilege of representing the horse capital of the world and the over 400 breeding operations here in central Kentucky, and we want to be able to market and sell our yearlings to the world, and we want our product to be a product that we all can be proud of, and that investors around the world will be interested in. That means jobs and economic activity for our people.
Well, the other thing you mentioned on August 31st was the fact that this has been a process. It's been a long road of negotiations, which have taken place throughout the entire process of putting this legislation together. What specifically were the most challenging aspects?
Well, I think your point about USADA is one of the issues that was a sticking point that we were able to broker a compromise to bring on support from some of the key racetracks like Churchill Downs to garner the support of Senator McConnell. So we have a identical companion bill now in the U.S. Senate. And you're right, this new proposal, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, it builds on the success or the builds on the momentum that we've been working on for the last 6 years. And I say we, meaning Congressman Paul Tonko, my co-sponsor of this legislation from New York. He represents Saratoga. Obviously, I represent Keeneland. But we think that the changes have really been improved the bill. And while we keep USADA part of the legislation from the standpoint of the enforcement entity, the criticism that you referenced of USADA being kind of a human athlete enforcement agency or anti-doping agency, that criticism really doesn't apply here, because we maintain that the authority that we create has expertise from within the industry, four members of a board, of a nine-member board, five independent from outside of the industry, but certainly four experts from the industry. And then we have committees, we have a committee for anti-doping and medication, and then we have a standing committee for racetrack safety. These will include seven members each, split of four independent and three industry members. So we absolutely maintain that industry representation is important, and the expertise that they bring to this from the standpoint of horse racing specifically, thoroughbred racing specifically, we're going to have that expertise on the authority. And USADA is no longer, under this compromise bill, no longer actually members of the board, but rather they will have a contract, a five-year agreement, to give USADA the ability to handle the day-to-day enforcement. But the authority, ultimately, with industry representation, the authority will be setting the rules overseeing lab testing and handling violations matters.
Visiting with Congressman Andy Barr here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, discussing the new legislation that has been introduced in the Senate and into the House of Representatives, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Congressman, one of the things that was brought up is that this bill is about, it's not about more legislation, but it's about smarter legislation and creating a single nationwide set of rules, which for years this industry has desperately needed. It is a fragmented industry, as we talked about, the patchwork structure. In what you've learned since beginning this process, why has the horse racing industry been unable to find a way to do this on its own for so many years?
Yeah, this is not new. We've been talking about this in the horse racing industry since my grandfather was attending the roundtable meetings, the Jockey Club roundtable meetings back in the 70s and 80s. He was in public relations at Keeneland Racecourse for many years in the 1950s, and then he was the vice president of the TRA, the Thoroughbred Racing Association, in New York in the 1970s and 1980s. And this topic of bringing the industry together, bringing all the various constituencies together under one league or one uniform authority, this has been talked about for decades, including back when he was in the business. So I recognize that this has been a long time coming, but I think this is a major, major advance of the industry generally. When you can get the Jockeys Guild, the breeders and owners, the Jockey Club, the Breeders' Cup, the various racing associations, the racetracks together, many, many horsemen, many equine veterinarians also now on board, and bringing all of those disparate and varied interests and constituencies together, I think that's a major accomplishment. And what I'd like to see this legislation be a springboard for is getting the industry to do a better job collaborating and coordinating on marketing of the sport. You know, the fact is there's a lot of competition out there for the entertainment dollar. Certainly that's the case in the sports world. And we want to see horse racing, you know, come back as one of the more popular sports in the United States. And I think if we are all singing from the same song sheet and we're all, you know, pulling together as an industry as opposed to fighting each other all the time, I think more Americans will see this as a great American sport, the great American sport that it is, and I think be more interested in following it. And we've got so many great stories, especially in recent years with two Triple Crown winners in the last several years with American Pharoah and Justify. I mean, we need those stories to attract a new generation of fans. And if we can ensure integrity and safety, and if horse players know that when they bet on a horse at Keeneland and then they bet on that same horse later at Oaklawn and then later again at Santa Anita, and that horse is operating under the same conditions and the same rules, I think you'll instill greater confidence in the betting public and in fans of horse racing. They know it's a process, it's fair. They know that they're betting on the horse based on its talent, its skill, and I think it's going to be just a stronger sport and a stronger industry overall as a result.
Yeah, amen to that. Congressman, what do you tell individuals who take the opposite stance and say, whoa, wait a minute here, we don't want to see any kind of government intervention when it comes to horse racing?
Well, I think it goes back to the point that you made earlier. This is not about more government or more regulation. I'm a small government conservative, and my co-sponsor is very different politically, and that's maybe unusual in these times in an election season to see that a liberal Democrat, Paul Tonko, and a conservative Republican, me from Kentucky, collaborating on bipartisan legislation. But I think that's a great thing, and it shows that we're not interested in more government or more regulation. In fact, what I would argue is we're actually talking about streamlined regulation, less regulation. Instead of 38 different sets of regulation, we're talking about a single national uniform set of rules, which I think is better regulation. It's more effective and streamlined regulation. So it's not about more rules or more government or more bureaucracy. It's about streamlined rules that make sense and that will more effectively allow the industry to thrive under these baseline medication rules and track safety rules. I think that is a positive thing for our sport, positive thing for the industry.
What are you most proud of with this bill, Congressman?
You know, I'm proud of the fact that we never gave up. We are heading towards a vote on the House floor next week, and it was not too long ago that people said this is a losing effort, this is a losing cause, there's no way you can do it. They've tried for decades, and it never worked. And I think it speaks to the power of persistence. I think it speaks to the power of hard work, and I think it speaks also to the ability to listen and compromise. I mean, we had different versions of this bill early on in the process, but I maintained that it was important to be open-minded and to allow the industry to direct this. And when there was disagreement, sit down and have all the parties come together and make those decisions on the details that would bring more people to the table and increase the coalition of support. We did that. We allowed that process to work. And through persistence and determination and an attitude that we were never going to give up, I think we are where we are, and we're really on the precipice now. I would even say the home stretch, if you will, of this long effort to get us to where we are. And I think we're going to be better off as a result, and I think you've got more and more people who now see the value in this reform effort.
Well, I know you have a busy schedule. I'll let you go. I promised 15 minutes, so I'll get you out of here. But I want to, first of all, say thank you to Senator Damon Thayer for putting us in touch. And thank you again for taking the time, Congressman. It was wonderful to hear your thoughts on this particular bill and this legislation. And we'll see where it goes from here. But greatly appreciate the visit this morning.
Hey, great to be with you. And thanks so much for highlighting this important issue. I am a huge horse racing fan, and I am so excited that our industry and our great sport is taking a great step forward, and here's to many, many more years of a prosperous thoroughbred racing industry.
Yeah, well said. Thanks, Congressman. U.S. Congressman Andy Barr here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, laying out the details of that particular piece of legislation, which has now been introduced in the Senate and in the House, and again, we'll see where it goes. That's one side of the issue. When I come back after our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, I'm going to visit with Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA, and he'll share his thoughts and tell you why he doesn't like the idea of this legislation. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
In late July of 1964, a well-matched field answered the call to post for the running of the Brooklyn Handicap over 10 furlongs. In that stellar field were Kelso with Milo Valenzuela in the saddle, Gunbo with Walter Blum at the controls, and Iron Peg with the shoe Willie Shoemaker up. There were 8 total starters, but the consensus was that the race would be decided amongst these 3, and consensus prevailed in what turned out to be a memorable performance by the eventual winner. A lot happened during the race, and a lot happened before. As the 8-horse field was loaded into the gate, Kelso knelt down in his stall as though preparing to pray. Rather than getting up on his feet, he reared back and sat on his haunches. It seemed totally out of context for the grand old champion, who had been calm in both the paddock and during the parade to post, but, for whatever reason, he was rank indeed at the gate. In fact, the starting gate went slightly askew as he went to his knees. Kelso had injured himself in the very same way while in training in California once before, and that had cost him the winter of racing. When Valenzuela and an assistant starter finally got Kelso righted, starter George Cassidy got the field away immediately and in good order. Kelso broke alertly enough, but by the time the field had gone barely an eighth of a mile, he had dropped well back into 7th place. By the stands they went and on into the clubhouse turn, with Gunbo under Walter Blum setting the pace and breezing along uncontested while increasing his lead. Around the turn and on into the backside, Gunbo opened up a margin so commanding it looked like a one-horse race with the rest of the field far in arrears. Iron Peg, the suburban winner under Shoemaker, had been the one that figured to prompt the pace, but he had all he could do to just keep close enough to have Gunbo in sight. You couldn't find the rest of the field with a sheriff's warrant. By the time they had gone 5 furlongs, Kelso was so far back that Valenzuela began whipping him to try to close some part of what was a monumental gap to Gunbo, and there was half the race yet to be run. Gunbo reeled off sensational fractions on the front end, and no doubt a great many in the crowd stole a look at the teletimer to check the fractions. At the top of the stretch, with still a quarter of a mile left to run, It was all over but the yelling, with the only remaining question to be answered was what the final margin of victory would be, and of course the final time. Blum was in the proverbial catbird seat for the entire trip, opening up a lead of 7, then 9, 10, and finally 12 lengths, the winning margin. He had never faced any kind of a challenge at all for the entire 10 furlongs. The final time was the expected sensational 1:59.3. Until this race, Gunbow became the first and only horse to have ever clocked less than 2 minutes for the distance in New York. Kelso appeared to have suffered no ill effect from the incident at the gate, returning after the race in good shape with no soreness. It was, very simply, that Gunbow had had his day, and a five-star effort indeed it was, July 1964, in the running of the Brooklyn Handicap.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
The 2020 yearling consignments of Brereton C. Jones Airdrie Stud are loaded with graded stakes prospects once again. Their consignments at Fasic Tipton and Keeneland September include half-siblings to current graded stakes horses Bell's the One, Dean Martini, and Indian Pride, as well as full sisters to Grade 1 winner Street Band and recent Saratoga Stakes winners Speak to Me of Summer and Kariba. Brereton C. Jones's carefully developed female families are brimming with exciting updates. Airdrie Stud's yearlings are raised for the racetrack. Think about it.
The 2020 Thoroughbred Owner Conference is being offered virtually November 3rd and 4th. We are committed to providing the Owner Conference in as safe and healthy an environment as possible. Experience 9 panels with expert speakers, moderators, and a keynote address. Ask questions of speakers from your home, office, or anywhere you are. Visit ownerview.com to register and be part of this important event while staying safe, healthy, and comfortable. Wherever you are, we'll be there. Visit ownerview.com today.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, edging ever closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. You're probably waiting. I didn't even give you a countdown in my opening segment this morning. I know so many of you are jonesing for that countdown. 40 days, 14 hours, 21 minutes until the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Keeneland, right here in Lexington, Kentucky. Of course, we'll be there all week long, beginning on Tuesday morning with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows. We'll be there to get you ready, and you will hear every Breeders' Cup race exclusively with us here on HRRN. Very proud to say that we have been the exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup since 2007, and looking forward to another great year here in the Bluegrass in 2020. Well, Eric Hamelback is with me now. I told you he is the CEO of the National HBPA and an organization that represents horsemen and isn't as high on the legislation that you heard Congressman Andy Barr discuss in the previous segment. Eric, first of all, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning. Happy to be on. And how are you doing? Everything's good, I hope.
Yeah, everything's good. Just had a visit with Congressman Andy Barr, as I mentioned, and he laid out some of the particulars of this piece of legislation that has been introduced. And as I talked about, there are people that will be pro legislation. There will be people that will be against this type of legislation. And I guess that's the side of the fence that you fall on.
Sure. I would first say that I think it's important for everyone to note that we appreciated Senator McConnell looking at the past Horse Racing Integrity Acts and really realizing that, you know, they weren't sufficient. Making some changes that many of us, including the National HVPA, myself, feel like are positive changes within the new legislation. But the reality comes back to the fact that the main opposition points that have continued to bother us with the legislation remained in Senator McConnell's new bill. And so while we do feel like there are definite positives within the bill, there are still issues that I think are concerning. And for us, we certainly feel as if can't move forward without some further questions answered.
What are some of those, specifically, Eric, what are some of those issues that don't set well with you and with the HBPA?
Sure. I think it's been widely known that the National HBPA and honestly many horsemen and horsemen's groups have continued to stand with veterinary leadership when Lasix is an issue. And again, you don't hear the AAEP or even the AVMA being involved with the legislation's makeup. It has some new wording, yes. It talks about having a study done, but what it doesn't talk about is it being peer-reviewed. And quite honestly, the points that the bill has with regards to the authority making changes are pretty vague to some extent, but also would be difficult to accomplish. So, you know, for us, again, health and welfare of the equine athlete and ultimately the humans that are riding them, we feel as if this sort of ban on Lasix without a study prior to is concerning. So that's going to still be an issue with us, and the fact that, again, veterinary leadership really needs to be involved in putting this type of thing together. We shouldn't let policy be driven by politics, right? We're hearing that over and over with the COVID pandemic, and we continue to hear from the media, don't let politics drive policy, let science drive policy. And that's exactly what this bill does not do. So again, if we wanted to do this correctly, if we wanted to do any changes based off of peer-reviewed science, I think that would certainly be better than what we have with this bill. One of points, Mike, is and always has been the most concerning for me, and it's the economics. It's the lack of a funding mechanism that this bill continues to not have. I think that when I look back on the 5 years that we've been looking and discussing this legislation, before I was even with the National HBPA, when I was on the Board of Trustees at TOBA, my concern was the economics, to the point where we asked Congressman Barr and Congressman Tonko for an economic impact study or some sort of understanding of what it's going to cost us, where's the money going to come from. Right now, I think this bill continues to allow the authority to levy millions of dollars on the fees or with fees and lay it on the backs of horsemen that are in the industry. And that is a concern because we don't know where the money's going to come from. So if I have to say my most concerning point is and really always has been, it's the economics of this. I mean, the reality, Mike, is that nobody has really proven that this is good for the industry. right? We've continued to push this legislation forward based around speculation, certainly not facts. The ones who continue to say that the industry is rampant with drugs and cheating, again, the facts aren't there. Could we do more? Absolutely. But when you look at the fact of what this could do to the industry, nobody's really looked at it. And I've continued to try to say, when you talk about the economics and how this is going to affect the industry and how this is going to affect horse players, ultimately our industry is driven by wagering, period. And there's no other way to say it. If we don't have owners and if we don't have horse players, we don't have an industry. So where is their voice? Where is the proof that this is good for the industry? And that's something that we continue to try to say. And you know, we continue to be called obstructionists. I like to try to say that I'm trying to educate folks into the details. Because at the end of the day, very few people have really studied the legislation well enough to argue the points. You know me, I'm not an attorney. I'm just out looking for the best in the best interest of horsemen, and that's what I want to continue to try to do.
Yeah, and Eric, you know, there are pros and cons. This bill is not necessarily
Absolutely.
Perfect, and nobody would ever say that it is, but as you said, there are some good elements to it. And I started the show by talking about the fact that, look, you can't dodge this. We are a very fragmented industry. 38 separate racing jurisdictions, each with their own set of rules and regulations, makes it so hard on horsemen to know what they're doing with withdrawal times and what the rules are in each state. And that's not good. We need to get that under control. But without a quote-unquote commissioner or league office, we don't even have a league. So you can't even go down that road. But I guess my question to you, and it's the same question that I asked Congressman Barr in the previous segment, why has the horse industry been unable to find a way to do this on its own for so long?
So, Mike, let's go back a little bit. First off, and I hope your listeners will take this piece of advice. We continue to hear the rhetoric of 38 individual jurisdictions. Okay, if I can do nothing else, please go to the RMTC website and first look at the fact that we only govern 34 paramutual jurisdictions. Okay, there are some jurisdictions that have licenses that we're not in there. And next, at the RMTC website, look at the fact that the controlled therapeutic substance list, the legal medications in this industry, 95% of the paramutual handle that's bet in the United States is under the exact same controlled therapeutic substance list. So if we really want to define uniformity, or as they continue to clamor, the lack of uniformity, let's look at how much uniformity there actually is. Okay, I always say we don't even get credit for what uniformity is out there. Okay, yes, there are some differences in withdrawal times, but the reality is if a medication's not on that controlled therapeutic substance list in any jurisdiction, it's illegal. You know, it isn't that you can run in Indiana on something that's not on the CTS and then not run on it in Kentucky. So once again, defining uniformity, I think, is very much a part of this discussion that always continues to get overlooked within the active 34 jurisdictions. So I would say in my research and getting University of Arizona and the University of Louisville's help, we've looked at what differences there are in the model rules with regard to medication. And again, remember, this bill, for the most part, outside of some track safety now, it's going to only deal with medication. And I truly believe that there is more uniformity than people even give us credit for that are trying to push this bill forward. And certainly those who are in D.C. that are outside the weeds of our industry don't understand what uniformity we have. So, again, I come back to that statement. I'm trying to educate those on what we have and, you know, how many people actually realize that in 2019, the ARCI, our current anti-doping program, we conducted close to 264,000 biological samples in horse racing, all three breeds. 99.45% came back violation-free, right? So the facts I still try to educate folks on, try to get people to realize that while you do hear the negative, you do hear media talk about the indictments, you do hear media talk about the horrific tragedies that occurred at Santa Anita, nobody's pushing out the good parts of the statistics that are really there.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I've said that a long time, Eric, and you and I have talked about it privately.
Yes,
there are the vast majority, and I don't even want to put a percentage to it, but I'm sure it's well in excess of 95% of the people that are involved in this sport are doing it the right way, playing by the rules. And yes, you always hear the negatives, but it's like that in every sport. It's like that in every industry. Those are the things that are going to sell newspapers and get people to go online to read articles. If you come out with positive things, nobody wants to go read about that. But God, you come out with a controversy or something that's not, that's not the norm, and all of a sudden everybody's flocking there to do it. So, yeah,
exactly.
I get it. I understand that point completely. Yeah. I'm coming out to a commercial break here in just a second, but you mentioned that there are some positives to this legislation. So, in about 30 seconds or less, give me the one thing that you think is the best part about this particular piece of legislation.
Well, it's the addition of the track safety. I think there are more than that, but track safety is something that we've been discussing and advocating for quite some time. We were the only organization that truly called out for an independent investigation of the racing surface at Santa Anita. I mean, for us, that was paramount. We saw it, we recognized what happened, and what was a very positive thing in Aqueduct. We weren't involved, but an independent independent group got together and evaluated the surface and the instance and what happened there in New York. That should have been done in Santa Anita, or if nothing else, use the roadmap that was created by that group. So for me, anything revolving around increased safety and accreditation of racetracks is very much a positive.
All right, Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Eric, listen, appreciate the visit. I know you've got other things going on this morning, so go enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure to be on, and I appreciate you getting the message out there.
All right, you got it. Eric Hamelback, I call him Eric the Tiger, big fan of the LSU Tigers from Louisiana. So, yeah, that interview, like all of our interviews here on the program, brought to you by Embrace the Race. You can embrace your passion, wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'll get to a break. I'll come back with our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and then get you set for a very, very busy second half of the show. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by a barren neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti at Odor! Caraconti!
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5. Caraconti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti, at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile. Join me and Bobby Newman every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern for Race Day on HRRN. We'll bring you all the action from places like Belmont, Keeneland, Churchill, and Santa Anita, interviews with the biggest stars in thoroughbred racing, and follow the road to the Breeders' Cup right to Lexington on November 6th and 7th. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream Race Day live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
With a quarter of a mile left to go, Breeze on by went 44-1 to the half mile. In his rearview mirror is the barn buddy Big Daddy Dave, who tries to go get him from second. The rest are not of consequence. Final eighth of a mile, and Breeze on by is still finding. Big Daddy Dave can't get him, nor can anybody else. It's on to two turns with a try for a sweep of the series. It's Breeze on by to win the affirmed by four in the end. Second, Big Daddy Dave. Cezanne completes the Stonehead's try, and the super completed for Gil Campbell. Top boss fourth in 1:22.3.
Breeze on by, looking for that sweep later today at Gulfstream. You're going to hear from his owner, Marilyn Campbell of Stonehedge, coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. That's just a few minutes from right now. But time for our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. And to do that, I welcome in Robert Cole, who is one of the three finalists in the Newcomer Award of the Godolphin Awards. And that's quite an honor. Robert, who was previously with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. First of all, Robert, congratulations on that honor. Well done.
Thanks, Mike. It's an honor to be on your show, and again, thank you for all the wishes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This segment presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. You can visit Stuart Morris at all the major consignments coming up coast to coast. Robert, I got a little backed up on time, but I have about a minute and a half or 2 minutes to visit with you here. I wanted to make sure that we did recognize you as our Industry Star of the Week, because getting that nomination, being a finalist, is incredible. Where did the love of racing begin for you?
It started as a teenager at Santa Anita, going to the track on the weekends, and never really got into the horses and the horse names and everything. At that age, I was all about the jockeys, and at that time when I was at Santa Anita, it was all about Chris McCarron. So, I still am a big fan of Chris McCarron. Every time I get a chance to see him commentating or analyzing races, it's always a treat. I was always a big fan of his.
Yeah, I can imagine that had to be special. Robert, you're going to kill me, man. I have to get to the next break here. We're getting ready to come up against the top of the hour. But, I wanted to bring you on. I wanted to say, hey, congratulations. Being part of that is incredible. And keep up the wonderful work, my friend. And good luck with the Godolphin Awards.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Love the show. And I'm sure I've got family that will be listening. So thanks for the time.
All right. Sorry to cut you short, my friend. Back with hour number two, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
Improbable has built a four-length lead. By my standards, Tom's d'etat, code of honor, it's Improbable and Errol Ortiz Jr. to win the Whitney.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic. And Odor at the rail and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's d'etat shaken up. Shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's d'etat.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Very, very busy morning, as you can tell. My apologies to Robert Cole for cutting him short. Wanted to hear more of his story as our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. But, yeah, good luck to him with that newcomer award at the Godolphin Industry Awards. That is such an unbelievable program. I've told this story many times. I had the privilege of being one of the judges on that panel last year and got a chance to interview all the finalists at Keeneland. We sat there all day long and had to choose a winner in each of the categories. And that was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do, because each and every one of those finalists are so deserving. And Robert is certainly deserving of getting that newcomer award. So we wish him all the best coming up in the Godolphin Awards. Yeah, if you missed any portion of the show, head back to the website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast at your leisure. My interviews in the first half of the program, talking about the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act with U.S. Congressman Andy Barr and with Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HBPA. Really good conversations there, exploring both sides of that legislation. With any piece of legislation, you'll have people on both sides of the issue, and we got a chance to look into the reasons why Andy Barr feels as if this is going to be good for the horse industry, and many people do, and why Eric Hamelback and the folks at the HBPA are opposed to some of the things that are in it, and he brought up some valid points there, too. Well, don't forget that this weekend at Woodbine, there is still live stakes action taking place. Later today, you have the Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes, and tomorrow, two turf stakes, the Bull Page for two-year-olds and the Victorian Queen Stakes for the two-year-old fillies. First post on Saturday and Sunday, 1:10 p.m., and for more racing and horse player information, all you have to do is visit woodbine.com. Well, toward the end of the first half of the show, you heard the stretch call of Breeze On By winning the Affirm Stakes on August 29th at Gulfstream Park. Pete Aiello brought him home. 7.5-length winner of the Affirm that day, and he's going to look to pull off a sweep of the Florida Sire Series Stakes if he can win later this afternoon when he goes to the post as a heavy favorite, no doubt, in the In Reality Stakes, a $400,000 race, mile and a 16th, stretching out for the first time, two turns, and that comes as race 10 at 4:59 Eastern down in South Florida. I have the privilege now of being joined by Breeze On By's owner and breeder, Marilyn Campbell of Stonehedge. Marilyn, first of all, good morning. Really appreciate the visit.
Good morning.
Looking forward to talking about Breeze. Oh, okay. Well, we'll try to turn it up there and get a little more volume for you. Boy, Breeze On By, what a special horse he's become, huh?
He has. We're very proud of him. He's done better every time he's ran, and hopefully he's going to pull it off tomorrow.
When you have a horse like this that shows this kind of promise as a youngster, for an owner, for a breeder, and you're both with Breeze On By, what's that like? How do you describe it?
The only stallion, smart owner, and the stallion and the mare, so that it makes it even special.
Yeah. What do you tell people when they ask you about being involved in the business and getting a horse like this?
Well, we've been in the business a long time. We've bred a lot of horses, and it takes a lot of hard work and perseverance, and there are ups and downs in this business all the time. You know, you have your good ones, and nobody hears about all the bad ones you have. But we all have just mediocre horses too, and if we're lucky enough to get a good horse, and this year we're doing very well with both our Cozons and Cajun Breezes. So it's been a special year for us.
Take me back through some of the history of Stonehedge, Marilyn, if you will. Not necessarily in the beginning, necessarily, but take me through some of the history and let people know more about Stonehedge.
Well, we purchased Stonehedge. It was the old Waldemere farm in 1988, and it was 150 acres at that point in time. And then we bought property that adjacent us, and we ended up now with close to 600 acres. We've had a lot of success with stallions. Our first stallion was Shenaney, who was an In Reality, and we had quite a bit of success with him. And then we stood Sword Dance, and we had Blazing Sword, who was one of our first to win the two Legs of the Sire Stakes. And from there, we stood West Acre, and he was successful for us. He had Scandalous Act, who won the three legs of the Florida Stallion Stakes. And now we're standing Cajun Breeze, and we are in part ownership with Cozon. So over the years, we've had the same manager, Larry King, and Darryl Scully's been with us as our brood mare manager, and Jamie King has been with us for quite a while now as our trainer. We do everything at Stonehedge. We have 60 mares. We breed basically to stallions in Florida, and the stallion stakes program is one of the first things that we steer ourselves to. We point our yearlings to the stallion stakes and try to, when they turn two-year-olds, we try to get them to those races, and we've been pretty successful doing it this year.
Well, there's no doubt about it, and I've had several conversations over the past few years with people like Lonnie Powell at the FTBOA, and the folks there are just tremendous in what they try to do. People at Gulfstream Park with guys like Billy Badgett, who work tirelessly to make sure that racing continues, even during a pandemic like this. Florida is very unique.
They've done a terrific job.
Yeah, they have. They really have.
We haven't been able to go to the races. We're up in Massachusetts, but our farm manager did go down with his wife the last series, and Gulfstream did a wonderful job. They had a lot of praise for the great job that they did for those that attended.
What part of Massachusetts are you in?
We're in Tyngsborough, which is near Lowell, Massachusetts, on the Nashua-New Hampshire line.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in western Massachusetts, and actually lived in Nashua for a while. That's where the old Rockingham Park used to be.
Old Rockingham Park. You wouldn't recognize it right now.
They
have all kinds of high-rises and shopping malls and... It's a shame to see it go, but that's progress, I guess.
Yeah, I hate to hear that. Talking with Marilyn Campbell of Stonehedge Farms in Florida, she and her husband, Gil, just do a fantastic job. Marilyn, you referenced the success of your stallions that you've had over the years. When you start looking to bring in a new stallion, what are some of the key things that you look for?
Well, I think the main thing that we look at the female side, and a pedigree that has a strong female side. That's basically what we try to get is something that has a good pedigree, but basically is a strong female side.
Well, and it seems to work. And again, they have the ultra-talented runner Breeze On By going later this afternoon at Gulfstream Park in the Florida Sire In Reality Stakes, looking to pull off the sweep of that series, be just the fifth horse to ever win all three, and we'll wish him all the best later today. Marilyn, let me ask you this question. Why Florida? Why is Florida the place to be for breeding and racing?
It's warm. It's warm in the wintertime. We looked at Kentucky, and we thought about Kentucky when we were looking at a farm, but we have a place on Marco Island, and we go and visit our farm. Actually going next week for a couple of weeks. But the weather, to me, was the biggest issue with both my husband and I, and it's a great place to raise horses. They talk about the Williston waters and the limestone on the farm that helps give good bone to the horses. And we're raising strong, big, good-looking horses.
Yeah, and I think that I mentioned the work of the FTBOA and Billy Badgett and people at Gulfstream and the people at Tampa Bay Downs, for example. The economics now in Florida are such that you can at least survive and hopefully get lucky and flourish a little bit too, right?
Right, exactly. Those awards, the Breeders' Awards are great. You at least, even if you don't own the horse but you've bred the horse, at least you're going to get an award back and some kind of incentive to raise good horses in Florida.
Marilyn, I'm curious. You mentioned Stonehedge, and you took me through some of the history of Stonehedge. How did you first get interested in horse racing?
Well, the funny part about it is my husband and I own a piece of property in Tingsboro, Mass., and it was used to be a dairy farm, so we started getting interested in riding horses, and we'd ride through the state forest and that type of thing. And a friend of my husband's asked him one time if he wanted to buy an interest in a horse, and a 25% interest, and from Peter Fuller, I'm sure you remember that name, Mum's Command and Dancer's Image and the whole bit. So he said, yeah, that'd be fun. So we started, we got 25% interest of Shenaney, who we ended up standing at our farm, and we just loved the industry, had success with Shenaney, and then went on to purchase our own horses, and they started accumulating. The fillies started becoming mares, and we just needed our own farm, and that's how we ended up with 600 acres and 200 horses.
Unbelievable. What an incredible ride it has been for Maryland and Gil
that's
Campbell,
fun.
And the ride continues.
Downs, but that's the business, and sometimes you have to have a strong stomach.
They say put on your big boy or big girl pants when you're going to play this game, and that is so true, isn't it?
It's so true. We just got a phone call. We're supposed to have a filly in the $400,000 stallion stakes today. Deborah and Ralph Nix, our trainer, just called and said that she came up lame this morning, so we have to scratch. So there's your ups and downs right there.
Yeah, highest highs and lowest lows. Marilyn,
but
I'm sorry to hear about that filly.
We were supposed to have 9 running tomorrow in Gulfstream, and now we have 8, but even that is quite a feat, I think.
Yeah, it's an incredible feat, and you're to be commended for all your hard work and dedication and perseverance. And again, sorry to hear about the filly, but want to wish you all the best with Breeze on By. And let's see
if
he can go ahead and pull it off for you and give you another high in this business.
That's right. Every day is a new day.
That's right. Well, Marilyn, appreciate the visit
this
morning.
We've been in the business 30 years, so I guess we're here to stay.
There you go. And we're happy to hear that. And appreciate the visit this morning. All the best later today and moving forward. And really appreciate you taking a little time.
Thank you.
All right. Marilyn Campbell here on HRRN against Stonehedge and Breeze on By. If you missed it in the first half of the program, as I opened the show, I talked about that particular accomplishment, what he is looking to do. The 2-year-old son of their stallion, Cajun Breeze, captured the Dr. Fager on August 1st. He rolled to that big 7-plus length win August 29th in the Affirm Stakes. He's 3-for-3 lifetime, and if he can win today at Gulfstream, he will be just the 5th horse ever to sweep the FSS. Say that 5 times fast. I can't even say it once. The FSS Open Division, joining three rules who did it in 2016, Sir Oscar, who pulled it off in 2003, Seacliff in 95, and Smile in 1984. So good luck to Gil and Marilyn Campbell later today with Breeze on by. All right, still to come, I'm going to visit with jockey Raji Miraj. He's going to talk more about the new whip regulations in place in California and in New Jersey. I think we may see more of that across the country. I will ask Rajiv that question. And toward the end of the show, 9:40 Eastern, Mike Willman will be with me from Santa Anita to preview all of the Win and You're In action taking place. I mentioned five Win and You're In stakes later today, two coming up tomorrow. And our coverage later today begins at 6:30 Eastern Time. Anthony Stabile, Bobby Newman will have you covered 6:30 to 8:30 with all the action from Santa Anita. I'll get to another break. I will come back and visit with Rajiv. He's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
World Class Racing is back at Santa Anita, and we'll play host to one of our biggest days of the year this Saturday as some of the best horses in America get ready to run in the Breeders' Cup World Championships in November. Although we remain closed to the public, fans are encouraged to follow Santa Anita's live video stream free of charge at santaanita.com. And you can also watch and wager via firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. A total of five Breeders' Cup Win and You're In Challenge Race qualifying stakes will highlight Saturday's racing with the Grade 1 $300,000 Awesome Again Stakes taking center stage. Don't miss Bob Baffert's Superstar Maximum Security as he's scheduled to prep for the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic as he takes on a solid field of three-year-olds and up at a mile and one-eighth. First post time this weekend is at 12:30. Again, our races are live streamed free of charge at santaanita.com, and you can watch and wager via firstbet.com.
The test of time. There is no better example than Mill Ridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as a pillar of the turf. Since 2000, Mill Ridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year, nearly 2 per year. If you're looking for success in the thoroughbred business, consider Mill Ridge Farm and its consulting arm, Nicoma Bloodstock, for it is proven and tested over time.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Ironicus. This graded stakes-winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners, including Canadian Champion and Horse of the Year Up with the Birds. A Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga, he won 3 graded stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. His first yearlings have sold for over 7 times his stud fee. The leading money earner at stud for emerging sire of sires Distorted Humor. Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Top of the stretch for Side Glance. Twilight Eclipse coming on strong. Here's Twilight Eclipse on the outside and Kagan. Exclusive Strike, nowhere to go. Farther out, main sequence, down to the final 16. Exclusive Strike reaching out for the wire on the outside. Here's main sequence. Main sequence surges to win it, making his North American debut in a big way.
And it's Group B Doll, and she's made the lead as they come to the eighth pole. Competition coming from Judy the Beauty, and on the outside, Dance Card. Group B Doll's in front, down to the 16th pole. Judy the Beauty, Dance Card on the outside, running after. Group B Doll digs in for all she has, and she has enough to win it! Group B Doll did it again!
Yeah, the calls of the United Nations at Monmouth in 2013, main sequence, getting the victory that day. And then Larry Colmus with the call of the 2013 Philly Amer Sprint, Groupie Doll, winning that Breeders' Cup race, again, 7 years ago. Those were two big victories for jockey Raji Miraj, who has had many, many big victories in his career. He is closing in on 2,000 career wins And if indeed he were to ride in those races again, and if he were riding in the races with the new regulations, by the way, the United Nations contested at Monmouth in New Jersey. The Philly and Mare Sprint that year was at Santa Anita in California. He'd have to do it in completely different fashion than he did in 2013, and he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rajiv, appreciate the visit.
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning, my friend. By the way, congratulations on the new arrival to your family. I know I congratulated you privately, but let's do it publicly, too.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, he looks more like his mother than he looks like you, though. That's good.
Well, thank God for that. Yeah, I was hoping. No, yeah, he look like a lot like Angie, and I see some of me as well, but mostly Angie so far.
Yeah, absolutely adorable, man. Congratulations to you and to Angie on that. And listen, I played those two calls, the United Nations and the Philly and Mare Sprint, because of where those events were held. And the new regulations that are going to take place in California starting this coming Thursday, and the new regulations taking place in New Jersey with next year's Monmouth meet, are going to restrict jockeys significantly from their use of the whip during the race. So I'm going to let you take it from there. I can imagine that that's going to create some pretty big challenges for you and your fellow riders.
Well, yes, for many different reasons. Number one, I think it's a big safety issue, not having to use the whip. There's a lot of things that people don't understand that's never ridden a horse. And one of the things that I do want to put out there is when you're riding, you have a feel for what the horse wants to do. And a lot of times you're trying to make narrow gaps in a short period of time. And you need the whip to cue the horse to go through these tight holes. Now, if you get into these positions and you're not able to use the whip and the horse decides he's partially in there and he wants to get out of there, you could be in a real bad position, because if they decide that they're halfway into a narrow hole and they want to back out of there and you don't have the whip to cue them to go on, you can end up on top of heels, bump, you know, the horse is sucking out of there and really be put into a dangerous position. And I think that's one thing that people don't see when they're just visually watching the race. They don't see the jockey's feel for the horse. The horse gives you that feeling before he tries to ease up that he's going to do it, or he's going to duck in and he's going to duck out. And usually use the crop as a cue to keep them doing what we want them to do, going forward or keep a straight line. And if we're not able to use that, we could be put into dangerous positions.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And let's recap for people that haven't heard exactly what the new regulations are going to consist of. In California, you'll be able to use the whip six times, a maximum of six times during the race, but no more than two times in succession, which also counts toward the six whip limit. And then the regulations in New Jersey will ban the whip use altogether to encourage a horse. It says that riders will still be able to use the crop if necessary to prevent injury. And I don't know how we end up deciphering and making that decision as to whether we're encouraging or preventing injury in a certain situation. Maybe you can shed some light on that better than I can.
Well, that's one of the big issues now. So do you wait until something happens, then you try to correct it after it's already in the process of happening? So how do they determine what the jockey is feeling on the horse when we do decide to use the whip? And when you do go for the crop, does that constitute a disqualification of the horse automatically? I mean, these are big issues that they're going to face, because the integrity of the sport is going to be in jeopardy. You know, people that are gambling on horses, they're gambling on a sporting event that people are going all out trying to win. You're trying your best as an athlete. So when jockeys are going to be in races head-to-head and not able to pursue their mounts the way that they need to get the best run out of them, why would people be betting on that?
Yeah,
I don't see that. I think that's going to be a big issue for gamblers. Now, people are betting their hard-earned money. Some people are betting thousands of dollars on horses, and they're going to be in head-to-head duels, and the jockeys are supposed to be sitting just hand-riding a horse. There's only so much you can get out of a horse hand-riding them. And then when they know that you're not going to even be flagging them, they're not going to be putting out.
Yeah, nobody is encouraging the overuse of the whip and the abuse of horses. And let's get that straight. Nobody is in favor of that. No jockey is. No owner is. But as you said, you're athletes. You're trying to win just like athletes in any other sport. And, boy, if you're unable to use it in the fashion necessary. And Rajiv, let's do this. Let's talk about so many of the changes that have been made in recent years to the way that jockeys are allowed to use the whip, and the whip itself is a much kinder whip than, you know, thinking back 30 or 40 years ago.
Yes, Mike, I've been riding now for, this will be my 17th year riding. When I started riding in 2003, The crops that we had back then, they were a little rougher than they are nowadays. And the reason why it's evolved into what we have now is we've been conscious about horses that used to get welts, or, you know, taking into the horse's well-being as our number one factor when it comes to using the crop. And there's been many racing jurisdictions that has implemented softer crops. And it's become the standard of racing in America. And also the ruling of how many times you can strike a horse. And I think that we've come a long way, and we're at a good place right now when it comes to the crops. The crops that we use nowadays, if I use it on myself at my maximum force, it wouldn't even leave a welt on a human. And a horse is way bigger and stronger than I am. And I haven't, all these thousands of races I've ridden over the past few years, I have never had one trainer or owner or anyone complain to me that I've left a welt on a horse. And I don't really hear that talk around the backstretch either. So there's not really a need that I see for whip change reform as severe as they're wanting it to be, other than a perception to appease to people that don't know that the whips aren't hurting the horses, and a lot of these people, they don't, the perception and the reality is two different things. Their perception of the whip is that it's somehow endangering the horses. The reality is, if we didn't have the crop and we're riding these races, we're more likely to get horses in situations where they'll have an accident.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point.
So do you protect the perception and then make the reality worse and put the jockeys and horses in more danger just to appeal to some people that, which is probably a small majority of the people?
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's focus on California for a minute, Rajiv. Is six times during the running of a race enough for a jockey to be able to effectively control a racehorse?
I would say yes. I would say it could be. You know, the real truth is that the Jockeys Guild we have come up with a great formula, with all the jockeys in the Jockeys Guild, we have come up with a formula that we think will be great for everyone, limiting the whips and everything. But a lot of the racetracks, they don't even want our opinion on anything. They don't want our input on it, which I think is pretty crazy, because we're the ones that are using it, and we're the ones out there performing and putting on the show. And we don't have a say in the matter. They just want to implement these stringent rules on us. And I think that they should all listen to what the Jockeys Guild has to say about the whips.
Yeah, and science, quite frankly. I know Ramon Dominguez has been a big proponent of the new softer whips, and many jockeys were going with those. I don't know if you still are using those whips that Ramon ended up creating, but the science behind it now is so much more advanced than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Exactly. We have such a great evolved tool to use those riding crops that Ramon Dominguez created. It would fit exactly in the place that people are wanting right now, which is soft crops of horses. And I think it's something that I'm definitely in favor of implementing like that. But like I said, over the past few years, even the crops that I've been using isn't damaging the horses. It's not leaving welts. It's not really making a big impact on them. So they're trying to address an issue that is mainly all perception. We're not doing any harm to these horses using the crop.
Yeah.
But I get the fact that there is people that don't want to see horses being flagged on unnecessarily, which I am in favor of. I don't believe that if a horse is out of contention that a jockey should even be using the crop on him, to be honest. That's just my perception of that.
Yeah.
Jockey Guild has come up with a plan of how to use the crops, and I think that all the racetracks should take that into serious consideration when they're making these rules and not just go out there and just throw up these stringent rules and force us to implement them.
Yeah, you know, Rajiv, at the beginning of the show, I was talking with Congressman Andy Barr, so I set it up by talking about the differences between our sport and other major sports, where you have a league and you have set rules that are in place no matter which stadium or ballpark that you're in anywhere in the country. With horse racing, it's different. We have a set of stewards at every racetrack in different states across the country, and their perception can be different. Their interpretation of the rule can be different. It's not like in the NFL where if you have a holding penalty in Pittsburgh, it's 15 yards. If you have a holding penalty in Dallas, it's 15 yards. It's different with horse racing. So let me ask you this. You said that if a horse is out of contention, you feel as if the jockey really shouldn't be using the whip at all. I mean, the horse is already a beaten horse. Don't even go to the whip. There are rules in place that a jockey can only do so much in most states, and the stewards regulate that and police it. Is that policed strong enough by the stewards across the country?
I believe it is for the most part of the tracks that I've ridden at. But like you said, every track is different, and what goes in some tracks doesn't go in other tracks. In New York, there's strict policies against using overuse of the whip against their guidelines. So whenever a jockey has ever overused the whip or broken the rules in New York, we face serious penalties from starting with big fines, and if it's more than one offense, it leads to suspension. So with the tracks that I've ridden at, yes, they've been really strong policing it.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. And again, Rajiv Miraj, so much insight here and some thoughtful comments, too, about the new whip rules that are going into place in California October 1st, that's this Thursday, and then next year at Monmouth Park in New Jersey. Vastly different protocols, and jockeys are going to be forced to adjust. And again, we'll see where it goes. But Rajiv, I really appreciate your thoughts, your comments, and appreciate you taking a little time here this morning. Always great to catch up, and please be sure to say hi to Angie and the baby for me.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. Stay safe. Rajiv Miraj here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, you know, the biggest element to this, in my opinion, and Rajiv started talking about that in the very beginning of the interview, is the safety aspect. And how do you determine, for example, in New Jersey, you can't use a whip to encourage the horse at all. It will be banned starting at Monmouth, meaning to encourage the horse, to get them to respond, to run faster in the stretch. If they're in a battle, you cannot use the whip at all. But you'll be able to use the crop if necessary to prevent injury. Well, who's determining that? You talk about subjective. You talk about opening a Pandora's box. Who's going to determine that and make that call? And like Rajiv said, as the jockey, making split-second decisions, by the way, if a horse is getting into a situation that's not going to be good for the horse or for the rider, do you hold off on using the crop to correct the horse because you're not supposed to do it? And then, by the time you finally decide to do it, it's too late, knowing that you're going to get penalized and get fined. That, look, this is, it's gone too far. And Rajiv outlined the fact that we have come miles in terms of the regulations and the protocols and the actual whips that are now used. And this has just gone too far, in my opinion. It's a joke. All right, when I come back, we'll turn our attention westward to California. We will talk about the big races this weekend, the Breeders' Cup Challenge races at Santa Anita. 5 today, 2 tomorrow. Mike Willman, the Director of Publicity, joins me on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
They're in the gate at Churchill Downs. And they're off.
Churchill Downs September meet is underway with post time each day at 12:45 p.m. now through Sunday, September 27th. A total of over $4.2 million in prize money will be offered over the 9-day race meet. And don't forget the $100,000 Grade 3 ACAC set for Saturday, September 26th. Don't miss the action. For more information, visit ChurchillDowns.com.
Discover the thrill of affordable race ownership with My Racehorse. My Racehorse features multiple horses at tracks coast to coast trained by top trainers like Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, Steve Asmussen, and Linda Rice. My Racehorse provides you with exclusive owner updates, and all earnings are paid directly to your online account. Get started now for as little as $65 at MyRacehorse.com and the free MyRacehorse.com app. My Racehorse is offering securities only through the use of an offering circular for this part of the offering statement qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. A copy of the offering circular may be obtained at MyRacehorse.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced Awesome Again's best son in Horse of the Year and Hall of Famer, Ghost Sapper. Now one of the most consistently brilliant sires this century, producing 11% black type winners, 6% graded winners, and 17% black type horses, highlighted by 12 grade 1 winners, 8 millionaires, and 5 champions. Adina Springs also bred and raced Ghost Sapper's best son, champion, multiple grade 1 winner, and Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic grade 1 double.
It's going to be a photo finish!
Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Believe in the first Shaman Ghost yearlings appearing at the sales this fall. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Silver Charm. Silver Charm coming with a bold rally on the far outside. Skip right toward the inside. And Swain is coming with his rally. And farther back it is Awesome Again. Victory Gallop is gathering momentum. One furlong to go. Coronado's Crest. Silver Charm. And Swain, the three of them. Not today for Skip Away. Victory Gallop continues to close. Silver Charm short lead. Here comes Awesome Again, who's flying in between horses. A wild finish to the classic. Awesome Again has won! Awesome Again is the winner. A three-way quarter for second among Victory Gallop, Silver Charm, and Swain, and went to the far outside.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Tom Durkin had the call of that 1998 Breeders' Cup Classic. How good was that field? I mean, the Breeders' Cup Classic is always good, but think about that. Awesome Again, Silver Charm, Victory Gallop, Swain. And Awesome Again proving best that day. Later this afternoon, we honor the great Awesome Again with a Breeders' Cup Challenge race, the Awesome Again Stakes, race 10 at Santa Anita, mile and an eighth, and the winner punching their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Classic, appropriately enough. And we'll see maximum security for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. He also sends out Improbable. And Midcourt back in there, too, trying to find some way to get past maximum security. Hasn't been able to do it in each of his last two outings. He was second beaten in nose in the San Diego, two starts back, and then beaten soundly by Maximum Security last time out in the Grade 1 Pacific Classic. And Maximum Security now looking every bit the part of the top handicap horse in the country. And I know that there were people who said, wait a minute, you know, maybe not, because of what happened with all of the previous trainers infractions. And now Bob Baffert at the controls, and he has Maximum Security. And, you know, Maximum Security proving that he is a really, really good horse. Forget about all of the negativity that surrounded him and what happened. But this is a really good racehorse, maybe even a great racehorse. And he's proving it now, and can't wait to see that showdown coming up later today in the Awesome Again. But as I mentioned, 5 Breeders' Cup Challenge races on tap for today, 2 tomorrow at the Great Race Place, and joined now by Mike Willman, the Director of Publicity, who does a fantastic job at Santa Anita. Mike, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Excited to have a day of this magnitude, and it's great to be back open.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. What's the situation there with all of the fires? I saw some pictures there last week that showed a lot of the dark skies and cloudy skies, and I know you had to postpone a little bit.
Well, this thing they're calling the Bobcat Fire, it's really a series of fires. The good news is the winds have shifted. Thank God we never really did have a strong Santa Ana condition. That's where the winds blow in off the desert. If we would have had that, we would have had, I think, unprecedented residential devastation. But the reason the smoke lingered as long as it did is we really didn't have any wind, and everything just laid here in the L.A. Basin. It was terrible. But now we've got this onshore flow where the prevailing breeze is coming in off the ocean like it's supposed to, and it really has cleared things up. The fires are northward in their path, I guess you could say, right now. So even though we get the occasional hint of smoke, it's just absolutely nothing like it was. Great conditions, and we're looking for some great racing, obviously.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear your voice again, and glad you are safe and healthy, and everybody at Santa Anita is doing well. And again, racing back in action again at the Great Race Place. Mike, 5 challenge races on tap for today. Let's take them one by one and talk about each of those. I guess we'll start right in order. The first one, race number 3, is the Grade 2 Chandelier, purse of $200,000. It is for the 2-year-old fillies. It's a short field of 5. That's why it's run so early in the program. But the 5 2-year-old fillies look to be pretty talented.
They do, but we've got an absolute complete standout. She's on the rail. And Bob Baffert, you know, surprise, surprise, he figures to have a massive afternoon. She hasn't done a thing wrong. Now, she will be trying 2 turns for the first time, as is everybody in the field. It shouldn't be a problem. Victor Espinosa rides back. She was a first-out maiden winner, then she just crushed in the Grade 1 Del Mar debutante going 7-8. She won off by 6.5 lengths. She's been 3-5 in both of her starts. John White, our morning line maker, has her at 2-5. And I think she's going to be a single in all the exotics, you know.
Yeah, she looks like a handful. That's a win, and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in the Chandelier. The 5th race of the afternoon is the 5.5 furlong turf sprint, the Speak Easy, with a purse of $100,000. These are 2-year-old males, and again, sprinting on the grass. Talk to me about that race.
Well, now this, to me, this has the look of a wide open race. We've got 3 first-time starters in here, and top to bottom, it's just really tough. I thought that Wesley Ward had a huge look here with this filly coming in. She had been in training at Keeneland. She's got 1 local half mile. She's an Irish-bred filly named Amanzi Yimpilo. Pete Miller's also got a filly in the race by the name of Feathers. She's on the far outside, and it's certainly not out of the ordinary to see fillies very competitive with their male counterparts at age 2 sprinting on turf. But in a coin flip, when I was writing the advance, I kind of went to Wesley's filly, and she is 7-2, a lukewarm second choice on John White's morning line. Commander Kai is the actual favorite for Richie Baltus. She's shown a lot of speed in 2 turf sprints at Del Mar, broker maiden last time out on September 4th, and I guess you could say he's the logical choice, but I was very much swayed by the fact that Wesley thought enough of this filly to ship out here, you know, obviously with that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint in mind, November 6th at Keeneland, and they get Luis Saez, who's out here primarily this weekend, for Mr. Baffert. But in a coin flip, I'm going to go with a Manzi Yampilo, but it's a really, really good race. Miller has another horse. He's a colt that had been trained by Luis Mendez. He comes off a maiden win on dirt, and they bought him, did Gary Barber, the owner, along with trainer Pete Miller, with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint in mind. They get Le'Veon Pratt. He had never ridden this colt. He should be very tough, and we know how effective Pete is in any context. The bottom line is the Speakeasy really, truly is a good race.
Nobody has their finger on the pulse of Santa Anita Racing better than Mike Willman. And you hear him talk about all of the two-year-olds going in the Speakeasy, a win and you're in for the Juvenile Turf Sprint. That's race five. Mike, race seven is the grade one Rodeo Drive down the hill. Well, down the hill in parts anyway. Mile and a quarter on the turf. And should be interesting to see who pulls this one out.
Yeah, it's a very short run down the hill. It's just above the dirt crossing, really. This is another outstanding race. And anybody who's seen Umberto Rispoli on turf, you know how dynamic this guy is. He's a guy that came to Southern California about a year ago, actually not quite a year ago, and Ronnie Anderson took his book, Sight Unseen, on the recommendation from Frankie Dettori. So at that time, Ronnie had Rispoli along with Joel Rosario, and Rispoli immediately made his mark on turf here. Just absolutely amazing how he seems to stay out of trouble. He's in a position to pounce turning for home, and he's very, very strong. He's a short guy. He battles his weight because he's so thickly muscled. Anyway, I'm making a case for the filly that he rides in here for Richie Baltus, Lady Prancelot. She's been very consistent. She comes off a good second where she was charging late, just missed by a neck in that grade two John C. Maybe last time out at Del Mar. She's done enough to merit favoritism, but Bochita, the English bred with Pratt, is another one that's got a huge look. She comes off a nice win in the yellow ribbon. She was just up by a nose, top to bottom. It's a very, very competitive race. And I think the trip will determine a whole lot here. I know Tim Yachtin feels he's got a shot with the cowbred. Le'Veon Pratt jumps off Mucho Unusual to ride Bodicita. But Juan Hernandez, who has really made a good impression, I think he's still fourth nationally in terms of races won. He had been piling them up at Golden Gate Fields prior to shifting his tack down here full-time last June. Craig O'Brien's got his book. And Mucho Unusual has run some races that put her right there. And this jock, Juan Hernandez, I would just ask everybody to don't let him get away from you. He produced more long shot winners at Del Mar than any other rider. It wasn't even close. So in a tough call, I'm going to go with Lady Prancelot on top of Mucho Unusual, but this is going to be a spread race for a whole lot of people.
Yeah, great stuff. The winner of the Rodeo Drive is going to earn a spot in the starting gate to the Filly Amare Turf. The race following at the American Faro Stakes will see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And, Mike, this is a field of 8 2-year-olds going a mile and a 16th on the main track.
Yeah, and again, no clear-cut standout, which is great for everybody playing the races. I just don't know. I guess you got to go with Baffert and Spielberg. Now, this horse is still a maiden. That doesn't mean anything in these two-year-old stakes at this point in the year. He gets Luis Saez. Had been ridden at Del Mar by Drayden Van Dyke. Pardon me, Mike, was second in a maiden sprint first time. Then they came back in a Del Mar Futurity and got bet. He was 3-1, but ended up second a length and three quarters. He was second best that day to Dr. Shivel, who looks like any kind of horse. So Spielberg is going to go to the favorite, even though he's still meeting. And, underneath him, I think even a cowbred Touchdown Brown has really impressed on occasion. He'll be ridden for the second time by Juan Hernandez. He's got the reel, first time long, but that's not a bad place to be. And he's going to be out there maybe free running, although Jack Sisterson has a horse coming in from Arlington Park who looks pretty quick by the name of Notable Exception. Pete Miller on the outside with Pratt, get her number toward the outside, I should say. And then a horse that might get overlooked, and he shouldn't, but he's from kind of humble beginnings. He was a $7,000 Keeneland yearling, Mike, a horse by the name of Weston. First out maiden winner. They got offered quite a bit of money for him. They came back at 5-1 and went head-and-head and won the grade two best pal at Del Mar going 6 furlongs, and they got offered quite a bit of money. They've turned it down. Ryan Hansen, whose wife, Michelle Yu, does a tremendous job on our simulcast signal. Ryan is a co-owner along with Christopher Dracos. So this is going to be interesting to see this colt first time. He was third in the Del Mar Futurity, beaten 5.5 lengths by Dr. Schivel, and, of course, Spielberg second in that race. It's going to be interesting. And then on the far outside, John Cherith, with a horse who has run a mile, broke his maiden at a mile back on August 29th at Del Mar. They put the blinkers on today, and Rispoli sticks with him, Wes Pirant. He's a son of Union Rags. He's a Marty Wygott homebred. So you put it all together, this is probably, contention-wise, the best American Pharaoh we've seen in a while.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Very, very deep field and some great insight there from my special guest, Mike Willman, Director of Publicity at Santa Anita. Mike, I've got about 2 minutes left, so let's go ahead and jump to the Awesome Again Stakes, and there will be people screaming that I bypassed the John Henry Turf Championship as race 9. That's a tremendous race, too, but the Awesome Again, winning you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division, Maximum Security. Is it all about him and everybody else?
It's all Max, that's all. He'll be 3-for-3 for Mr. Baffert. Was ridden very aggressively by Abel Cedillo at Del Mar twice in the San Diego. A narrow winner down there over midcourt, and then he just, pardon my language, he just kicked their ass in the Pacific Classic. Look for more of the same from Maximum Security, the Starcross Maximum Security. He's the best horse in America, and I think he'll show it. As for the John Henry, it looks like that's United's race to lose, but a lot of contention underneath. I think there's a long shot that's worth a look at 8-1, Proud Pedro. He's a French bred with the aforementioned Juan Hernandez. But in the big one, the Awesome Again, it's going to be Maximum Security, and it's all steam, full steam ahead to that $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic November 7 at Keeneland.
In about 30 seconds, Mike, tomorrow, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship and the Zenyatta Stakes winning your ends in their respective divisions. Who do you got?
Well, I got to find the overnight here. we've got a mile and a half race that day as well, the Tokyo City. I love Collusion Illusion in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. Now, CZ Rocket has been a miracle claim for Pete Miller. They took him at Oaklawn Park back in April. He's rattled off 4 straight wins for Pete since. But Collusion Illusion, he's something special. I really, really like this horse. In the Zenyatta, it's Baffert, Saez, Fighting Mad. She won't get beat.
He's the best. Mike Willman, Santa Anita. Mike, listen, enjoy the weekend, and great to see you guys back up and running. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll catch up again soon.
You do the same. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right, Mike Willman here on HRRN. Fantastic. Fantastic. He knows so much about what's going on with all the connections and all the horses. Just incredible. And that interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Well, time now to take a look at the Kentucky Bred Spotlight presented by the KTA KTOB. This monthly look tells you that with 75% of the Grade 1 races in the U.S. this year being won by Kentucky Breds and 13 of the 14 seven-figure yearlings in Book 1 of the Keeneland September sale being bred in Kentucky, it is easy to see why Kentucky Breds are the most coveted horses in the world. Breed them, over 170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006. Think about that. That's a big number. Raise them. Yeah, you can do that too. Limestone, rich soil, the best practices and strong support. Industries make Kentucky the best place to raise horses and raise them here. Purse money at Kentucky's tracks continues to soar, exceeding $118 million in 2020. So race them here too. And then we all win. Absolutely. Find your Kentucky Bred in October and November at the Fasig Tipton and Keeneland sales. Visit KentuckyBreds.com and register KBIF.com to learn more. I'm back to wrap this one up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti and on door. Cara Conti.
Gainsway Stallion Cara Conti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5. Cara Conti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Cara Conti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is Wesley Ward on the Conqueror Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, be sure you don't miss the September 26th issue of Blood Horse Magazine. It includes, among other things, Call of the Hall. Revitalized National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame includes interactive displays, plus Blood Horse Market Watch with an in-depth look at value sires, sires progeny performance statistics, and prospective stallions, and of course racing through Congress. You heard me talk about that in the first half of the program. After years of false starts, federal oversight of the sport might soon become reality. All you have to do is download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play, or go to shop.bloodhorse.com. Well, my thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible. We covered an awful lot of ground over the course of the past 2 hours. United States Congressman Andy Barr, who joined me in the first half of the show, along with Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HBPA, Marilyn Campbell, looking ahead to the Florida Sire Stakes at Gulfstream this afternoon, Rajiv Miraj talking about the new whip regulations for jockeys, and Mike Willman just a short time ago in that last segment previewing all the challenge action coming up this weekend at Santa Anita, and our industry star of the week, Robert Cole. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and thanks to everyone who voted in our poll question on Twitter today as well. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling our social media, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time. As always, 2-0, go Steelers.